is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
And we are here until 2 o'clock today, live at The Pine downtown, Jasper and 109th Street. You can email us at nationradio, team1260.com. And we welcome to our show from TSN, Scott Cullen. How are you?
I'm great. How are you today?
I'm very well. Before we talk about your Oilers article and advanced stats, I want to congratulate you on a killer mock draft last season. You had Hall at number one, Pitlick at 27, and you were pretty bang on a lot of those. Did you spend a lot of time on that?
Well, I don't know if I spent a lot of time overall, but it's not like I can claim any inside knowledge or anything. It's a matter of matching up, needs and players, and kind of relying on a little bit of luck when it comes down to it, really, at the end. But that I hit on some Oilers picks is all right. I can't complain. Can't complain when I'm right, because I surely don't complain when I'm way off.
Have you started looking at this year's draft, or is that something you do more towards the end of the playoffs?
I'm starting to, but I would say I'm in the preliminary stages. It's as the season goes on, I kind of just keep a vague eye almost on what's happening on the draft boards. And now that the playoffs have begun, I've just kind of started looking at, all right, what do these teams need, and who's out there that might fill these needs.
You did a nice article as well on goaltending and save percentage for the teams that are still in the National Hockey League playoffs. Your insight was pretty interesting there. What do you think of the series as they've begun so far?
Well, I think what I found, and this is just kind of an idea that I had, and it came up almost really because of last year when Montreal knocked off Pittsburgh, and I looked at kind of the vast difference that they had in save percentage in the series between Jaroslav Halak and Marc-Andre Fleury. And so I thought, all right, well, let's try it for all the series in this year's playoffs and see what the expected goals for and against might be based on what a goaltender has done for their save percentage to this point in the season, including the first round of the playoffs. And what a team has done allowing shots for and against. And I think it certainly doesn't cover everything that's involved with the team. I mean, once you start taking into account injuries, some of these overall numbers aren't going to be quite representative. But it gives you a kind of a baseline, I think, to see which team, might be favored, might have the upper hand going into the series. And so when I look at it, the early returns from the second round aren't terribly unexpected. I think Vancouver should be expected to have an advantage on Nashville. I do have San Jose. I picked Detroit to beat San Jose, but it's almost a heart more than head thing going on there. That I think San Jose has really great depth, and that they end up with a great shot differential as a result. And so even if they only get adequate goaltending, it means Detroit needs spectacular goaltending, I think, to come back and win the series.
How much of a wild card is Dwayne Roloson in that series against Washington?
Well, I think he became a huge wild card in the series against Pittsburgh. When they were down 3-1, it didn't look like any real trouble for the Penguins, even though the Penguins really didn't have a lot of marksmen in the lineup. And then Roloson really shut them down over the last three games, and he finished the first round with the best save percentage in the playoffs. And certainly, who expects that from a 41-year-old goaltender? That the Lightning can get an adequate performance out of Dwayne Roloson isn't anything that's a revelation. But the fact that you get the guy who gives you the best save percentage in the first round, well, that's really a difference-making result. So if he can kind of keep that up, and maybe he doesn't keep a .954 save percentage for the second round, even if it's a .930 or .940, like something that's above the norm, that certainly gives the Lightning a chance to knock off the Capitals.
Well, any Oiler fan will tell you, as long as they don't employ Marc-Andre Bergeron on the defense, it'll be fine for them. So let's get back to the Oilers a little bit in the draft a little. They're only the second team in NHL history to get the first overall pick 2 years in a row, or at least Ottawa used two picks in a row in the 1990s. Do you think there's a chance the Oilers will move that pick, move down a little bit to get a little better pick or possibly a roster player?
Well, I think they have to keep that option open to them. I even last year when they had the number one pick, and there was talk before the draft about them trying to wheel and deal so that they could get the first two picks. And that was kind of like a last gasp thing that, oh, well, maybe they'd move Alex Hemsky and then get the first and second pick and really not worry about the Taylor or Tyler debate, just take them both. you know, I think they would have to consider moving out of that pick. But at the same time, if everybody's top guy, and I don't know that anyone has come to quite a consensus on it yet, but if Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is, a guy who people are going to expect as a top pick, well, he's a playmaking center, and it's not like the Oilers are overrun with playmaking centers. So that seems like a decent fit to me.
On April the 27th, you wrote a really good article on the Oilers and the summer game plan, and two things caught my eye. Let's start with advanced stats. Whenever I see things like shot differential, my ears perk up. What are the advanced stats that you value the most and use when you're evaluating a player and a team?
Oh, I think it varies from situation to situation, and so what I mean, as you know from my article, I go to that site behindthenet.ca, where Gabe Desjardins does a fantastic work digging up some of these, I guess, more involved stats, the things that you're not going to find on the back of a hockey card, and it gives you a better insight into what a player is doing. And in the case of that article, I know I wrote something about Linus Omark, because Omark had a minus 16 rating in 51 games, and on first glance, you look at that and go, oh my gosh, that's terrible. And the advanced stats, the shot differential that came out of it, is you find out that Linus Omark actually had a positive shot differential. It was the best among Oilers who had played 50 games. And so, you know, maybe Linus Omark isn't the world's greatest defensive player, but the fact that he has such a positive shot differential might indicate he's not the awful defensive player that the plus-minus would tell you right off the bat. And so I don't think any of the advanced stats are kind of a catch-all that, oh, you just look at this number and then you know what value a player has. But I think when you start applying them into certain situations, you get more insight. You're going to know a little bit more about it. And so in the case of Omark, I would look at it and say, well, yeah, he probably does need to improve his defensive play, because I'd still like to see a guy who's not minus 16 in 51 games. But at the same time, I'd be willing to give him that chance to improve on it, because, yeah, the shot differential wasn't that bad. And, you know, as the rest of the Oilers continue to get better, you would figure Omark's numbers will also get better.
I like it, and I agree with you totally. And I like that shot differential stat, because it really does match what we often see with our eyes, where we see a kid with minus 16 and we're like, man, I think he's better than that. And he really is difficult to get off the puck. Once he has it, he really can maintain possession, and he does things that we don't associate with a poor defensive player, although he's still young and he's on the wrong side of the puck a lot. So it's interesting insight that you pass along. When evaluating a player, do you factor in time on ice and quality of opponent as well?
Well, I like to, and that's kind of, I think, almost the evolution that's just waiting to be explored in advance. I know they do have a lot of the quality of competition and things like that are terrific. And I went to the Sports Analytics Conference this year in Boston, and there was a guy who was doing plus minus there, but it was all based on strength of competition as well, the way he was weighting the plus minus. And the results gave you, I mean, you don't want to create a new stat that totally turns the world upside down and all of a sudden tells you that Pavel Datsyuk and Sidney Crosby are terrible players. You're not trying to find a stat that does that. You want a stat that sort of verifies, you know, the players that we all know are the best players. You still want to know that they're the best, but maybe other guys will slide their way up into that leaderboard, and you kind of go, oh, well, maybe there's more value to this player. And so when I was looking at the strength of competition that he uses in that, I think, like, that is of huge value, knowing, you know, the matchups that a player's against. And a guy like Nicklas Lidström, everyone would suggest to you that Nicklas Lidström has, you know, he slipped because he had the first minus year of his career, and maybe he has. He's maybe not the Nicklas Lidström that he was at his peak. He was also taking on the toughest opposition in the league on a night-in, night-out basis. So, you know, yes, maybe Nicklas Lidström isn't at the peak of his career, but he's no slouch. He's still getting, you know, the hardest minutes available.
And he's a guy who, I think if we look at NHL history, guys like Doug Harvey and Tim Horton, those defensive players often can play into their 40s and be very effective because they're so darn smart when they don't have the puck.
Oh, and Lidström has almost become a master of, you know, being very efficient in his movements. And, you know, even with the goal he scored last night, it only required a quick burst from him to get off the blue line and get open to score that goal. But, you know, the rest of the time, Lidström can play his angles and keep himself in good position. And as you say, it'll, you know, allows his career to go much longer. And, I mean, heck, even in when I'm playing pickup hockey, I find it a whole lot easier playing defensive my age now.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm not going there. You know, it's too far. One of the things that I've learned from advanced stats in the last couple of years, and this is just an aside, it's not really going anywhere, but when Craig McTavish coached the team, he was really a hard line matcher, and as Quinn got the team, and now Rennie, who's basically just in development mode, it becomes very difficult to gauge toughness of minutes, specifically for forwards, when you're rolling four lines, and I think that's one of the things that hopefully we can find a solution to as we roll on here and experience advanced stats and add to it and figure out exactly what's going on. With regard to the Oilers, you talked about nine rookies who played a dozen or more games this season, most of them quality players, Hall, Pyarvi, Eberle at the lead. How good do you think these kids are as a cluster, as a group moving forward?
Oh, I'd be quite encouraged if I was an Oilers fan looking at this group. And that, you know, I'm not saying this just because of my Edmonton radio. This is, Hall, I think, and he started out a little slow, but I think by the end of the season it was pretty clear that he has the chance to be a real game-breaking scorer. Like I mentioned in the article that I could see him being a 40-goal guy, you know, on a yearly basis, and that is, you know, maybe Taylor Hall's a 50-goal guy, and I'm undershooting, but I think, you know, if you're looking at today's NHL and you call somebody a 40-goal scorer, that's there's only a handful of guys doing that every year, and I think Taylor Hall has that kind of ability. So, you know, having him at the top of the class certainly helps. But even the development of a guy like Magnus Pajarvi and Linus Omark, I think that kind of gives you nice depth in the organization. And honestly, late in the year, I really liked what I saw from Teemu Hartikainen.
Yeah.
I know he only played a dozen games, and it's really just his first year in North America, and maybe those dozen games weren't terribly important given where the Oilers were in the standings. But I thought he totally looked like a keeper. And so, you know, if you're pulling, you know, that many guys in their, you know, rookie year and getting contributions and that you expect to go forward and continue to build on, well, I think that's, you know, really what any team that has gone through struggles, what they're really hoping to achieve. And so I think the Oilers are off to a good start in that regard. And, you know, with the first pick this year, hopefully they'll add another piece to the puzzle.
Help me with this, because one of the things that I'm trying to figure out in my own brain is with the improvement, and I agree with you, I think Taylor Hall could score 40 goals. He's got that kind of talent, and he really came on late. And with these other kids, if they stay healthy and maybe add a defenseman or maybe a center who can win a faceoff, how do you project that into the future for next year in team wins? Is there any way to do it? Because, you know, I mean, I can say, hey, they're going to win 35 games next year, but that's a lot of improvement in a National Hockey League season.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I don't know. I think there are plenty of guys, and I think some of the people at Hockey Prospectus are probably closer at trying to identify, okay, if you add this, it'll equate to this many wins in return. And I don't have really a firm grasp on, okay, if you bring in a guy who all of a sudden is 60% on the draws and he's replacing guys who are, you know, 44 and 45%, how many more wins is that going to be worth at the end of the year? I mean, honestly, if it's just an improved faceoff, man, that might be worth a half a win a year. It's really hard to quantify what kind of value you're going to get out of that. So I think, and part of the interesting thing is with the Oilers is they don't necessarily have to bring in a whole lot. I mean, they do need an upgrade on defense, and yes, they could use playmaking center, but part of what their improvement has to be is internal improvement, where all these guys have to, you know, continue to mature and grow as players together, and hopefully it all kind of works in the right mix that they end up improving as a whole, at least as much as they are individually.
You talked about needs in the article, and we just did a minute ago, but size, acquiring players that are tough to play against. Are there a lot of kids who fit that description in this year's draft, or do you think the Oilers are better off going the trade or trade or free agency route?
Well, I think if you're looking for guys who are going to make an impact immediately, then, you know, I would certainly look to the trade and free agency. And if, you know, when you're looking at, okay, we might need somebody to go out there and bang a little bit because we have Hall and Eberle and potentially, say, Nugent Hopkins. These guys shouldn't have to fight their battles effectively. You know, you need somebody else to go out there and do the fighting for them, or even just, you know, policing the area. And if you look, say, what Tampa Bay has done, when they brought in Ryan Malone to play alongside Steven Stamkos for quite a bit the last couple of years, and not like Ryan Malone is a heavyweight who's taking on every tough guy in the league, but he sort of, you know, rides shotgun out there and keeps things in control for Stamkos so that he's not getting abused out there too much. And so I think the Oilers could use somebody like that, and, you know, it doesn't have to be Ryan Malone. It could be any number of guys who are you know, even a guy who's a checking forward, who every once in a while you can move up for a shift or two to play that role. Because as much as the Oilers have these skilled guys who are young and entertaining, at some point when you want to make the jump from being a interesting team on the rise to being a real tough, you know, a tough out in the playoff, well, then you have to have some guys who are real hard to play against. And right now, when I look at the Oilers roster, there just aren't a lot of those players.
Yeah. Now, I want you to choose this answer very wisely, because one of the real frustrations for Oilers fans right now is that because we're far away as a group, you know, as fans from enjoying what, say, Vancouver is right now, the Oilers often call upon the Detroit model or the Chicago model as comparisons to this build that we're having in Edmonton. What kind of build does it look like from where you are? Is it a build that makes sense, or do you see some large cracks in the rebuild?
I think it makes sense. What I find interesting is that a lot of the teams that are doing the rebuilds now are really, they focus on center and defense. And you know, if they can get reasonably priced goaltending, that also helps. So when I look at the Oilers really have a lot of their talent is on the wings. And so I think that they still could use, you know, I guess more strength down the middle. I guess if you had thought Sam Gagne, when he scored 49 points as a rookie, that he still wouldn't have scored more than 49 points now, you might have thought, okay, well, Sam Gagne was a guy that they thought was going to be a point-producing center for them. And certainly Sean Horkoff hasn't turned out the way the Oilers might have hoped when they signed him to the contract. So yes, I do think that, yes, they need some more help down the middle, and whether that's Nugent Hopkins or somebody of that ilk, sure, that they definitely need that. And they definitely need help on defense, because, healthy Ryan Whitney will go a long way next year, I think. But the rest of the guys, I think, are entirely questionable. Like Tom Gilbert, I could easily take or leave Tom Gilbert, whether he's part of the future of the Edmonton Oilers or not. And I think that's what the model that you see what's going on, say, on a team like Chicago, is they got the strong centers and they got strong defense, and then they sort of work in the pieces around it. Right now, when I look at the Oilers, I see that they have the pieces that you would surround strong centers in defense.
That's a really good point. Now, for those who are too lazy, even though I'm telling them to go see your article on the Oilers on TSN, you had a great list of possible free agents, Reisner, Kopechki, Ponikarovsky. Maybe run down some of those names that you think might fit the Oilers mold, and maybe some of the ones that you didn't mention that you think might also fit.
Sure, and this goes right back to the point of, you know, some guys with some size who are going to be tough to play against. And then when I mentioned guys like Ponikarovsky and Kopechki, I mean, they're not you know, bruising guys who are going to go out and drop the gloves night after night. That's really not their role or what they've done. But they're guys who have size. They're huge wingers, both of them. And they can bang in the corners, and they can, you know, create a little space out there by doing that. And if you look kind of further down the depth chart, I mentioned guys like Adam Hall and Marty Reisner. Both of them are very good face-off guys. I mean, no one's going to get terribly excited if the Oilers go out and sign Adam Hall or Marty Reisner. But for a team like the Oilers, who really need help in the face-off circle, you know, maybe those are guys who can help. When it comes to the blue line, I think they need somebody who is a real reliable stay-at-home guy. And the names that I threw out, like Jan Heda, who seems to have really developed since leaving Edmonton. He had some real some real success in Columbus as a shutdown kind of defenseman. And I don't know whether the Oilers would be interested in bringing him back, but a player of his, you know, of his skills is kind of what they could use, a guy who's going to be able to play on that shutdown pairing. And Radek Martinek of the Islanders, Milan Yurchina of the Islanders. I mean, I'm offering these guys out as possible suggestions, also because I don't think they're going to, you know, you're not going to have to break the bank to get them.
Yeah, good point.
The Oilers aren't in a position where they should be throwing huge money at a free agent defenseman. Right now, you're still trying to build with this team, and you don't want to tie yourself up financially because you went out to get, like, Scott Hannon or somebody like that, who's really kind of a guy who should be bouncing from contender to contender at the moment.
Scott, I enjoyed this very much. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, anytime. Thank you very much.
All right. Scott Cullen from TSN. As I mentioned, he has a very interesting Oilers article up this week, and also one on goaltending in the Final Eight in the National Hockey League playoffs, and somebody very much worthwhile reading, and obviously a very interesting interview. It's 22 minutes after 1. We are Nation Radio and Edmonton Sports Radio Team 1260. We're live at the Pint downtown, Jasper 109th, and we're coming back right after this.